Welcome to part two of our interview with Laura DiDio about the Amityville Horror investigation.
I think it's cathartic for both Danny and Chris.
Yeah.
That was something that they went through. I mean, especially coming on the heels of, you know, their parents' divorce. And then also imagine having to go to school and face all of your peers.
Sure.
On that. And then the movie comes out and the book comes out. And the kids were aware of it. There's no way to shield them from it. But imagine if that happened today.
Yeah.
I mean, back in the mid-70s, the Lutzes could go underground and basically hide a bit in plain sight. Today, that would not be possible.
No.
I mean, you know, they could, you know, today they'd have to go off the grid entirely.
Their furniture, everything, they left the house. What about their possessions? Did they ever go back and get anything, or what happened with all of that when they left?
What happened was they did ask the Warrens if they could get a couple of things for them, from them, mm-hmm. from the house for them. But other than that, most of the stuff they let the bank take. I did go back into the house. I had their house keys. I went into the house. I went back in by myself a week or two after the seance with my dog. And I had an experience there. I just wanted to go back in mm-hmm. and see what would happen. It was in the middle of a Saturday afternoon. I went in with my dog Fritz, who was a German. Both parents were purebred. He was a German Shepherd Labrador Retriever, mm-hmm. and I mentioned the breed because, as you know, a lot of Labradors and Golden Retrievers are empathetic in terms of being able to predict when somebody's going to have a heart attack or an epileptic seizure or a diabetic seizure.
Yep.
I have no such idea if Fritz never predicted anything like that, but he was a very empathetic dog, and as a shepherd, he was very protective. So I was walking around I wasn't supposed to be in the house, technically, but I still had their house keys. And I just wanted to see what would happen, because I was never bothered by anything in the house when I was there. Never felt a chill, never had heart palpitations, never felt physically ill. So I was walking around the house on the bottom floor, and Fritz was in the foyer. And all of a sudden I heard the dog growling. So I came back out, and he's standing at the bottom of the stair landing, staring up at something again on that second floor landing, right at the spot where everybody got sick or had a bad feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And all the hackles were up from his neck to his to all the way down his back. And he's just staring, fixed stare, teeth bared, ears back, looking at something.
Yeah.
And I don't see anything, and I can't hear anything. There's nobody there, and I started up the stairs. It was really creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know, this is perhaps not a good idea. Because he was looking at something, like he could see something and I couldn't.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, nobody told my dog that six people were murdered in this house. Nobody told my dog that there could be a demonic force here.
Mm-hmm.
I had never seen my dog act like this before. This was not a spooky puppy, and it was not an old dog. This was a dog who was 4 years old in the prime of his life, who, you know, was a New York dog, was used to the sights and sounds of the city, etc. I had never seen him act that way before or since. But he clearly saw or sensed something that I didn't.
And sometimes that's that's the best proof you have right there, is how the animals react to
exactly
a situation.
So I said, time to leave. Okay, so call me a chicken, but between that and what happened with Steve Petropoulos, the cameraman.
Sure.
That was, you know, to me, that's the best evidence. And then fast forwarding to, you know, 2006, sitting here in my office and having the urge to talk to Lorraine Warren.
Yeah.
Out of blue, and then finding out that the very moment I got that urge and was on the phone with Lorraine Warren for 2 hours, and very moment we were talking, that George Lutz, you know,
yeah,
was that, having a heart attack and dying.
That is so, yeah, that's very bizarre. Do you think there's anything about this case yet that we don't know, that we've yet to discover about it or hear about in any sort of major sense, other than just a perspective here and there, maybe from one of the kids, you know, recounting some of the occurrences that went on in the house?
I suppose there's always something, okay? I think it involves actually the live human behavior, really. Ultimately, it's a lot of the story of human greed and human kindness. With Lorraine's passing in the last 2.5 weeks, it gave me time to reflect on this. I mean, and somebody who was known for her psychic abilities, I think what often gets overlooked here is what she and Ed most wanted to do was actually help people. So that was at the very beginning of this. I mean, one of the things people don't realize is that over the years, like the following year after this, when the Lutzes moved to California, she and Ed were out there, and Ed spent a lot of time talking to Danny and Chris, just walking on the beach, just talking to those kids, trying to help them out, and sort of being, you know, a sort of really big brother, uncle type.
Sure.
To them. And when we went to see, when we went to film at Lorraine's house, and Danny was with us, Danny hadn't seen Lorraine for years. And Lorraine was, Danny, how are you doing? Are you okay? And she asked him how, you know, George had treated him. She was very dismayed when Danny was saying to her that, you know, he didn't have a good relationship with George. And Danny was very solicitous of Lorraine. You know, so there's that. She was very concerned, you know, both Ed and Lorraine were very concerned about the living. I mean, that's a wonderful testament.
Sure.
And I started to tell you, here's an interesting thing that happened. Back in 2006, May 5th, 2006, I was sitting here in my home office, and I'm working. I was writing a report on high technology, which I do, having nothing to do with Amityville. And all of a sudden, the thought pops into my head. like a little psychic flash. I have to call Lorraine. I haven't talked. I have to call Lorraine Warren. And I hadn't talked to Lorraine in about a year. And it wasn't one of those things where you think, oh, I haven't talked to so-and-so in a while. I have to give them a call. It was, I have to call Lorraine Warren now. I picked up the phone. I called Lorraine. She answered. I said, Lorraine, how are you doing? And we spent the next 2.5 hours on the phone. And of course, we talked a lot about Amityville. And at that point, Ed was at home and he was incapacitated from a stroke that he had suffered several years before. And he couldn't, he had lost the power of speech, but Lorraine said she could communicate with him, you know, psychically. She always knew what he wanted. Mm-hmm. And anyway, later that night, I see a story breaks over the wire that George Lutz had died earlier that day from a sudden heart attack. And he had died of the heart attack while Lorraine and I were talking on the phone out in Las Vegas. So I called Lorraine back the next day. I said, Lorraine, did you see that? I said, and I had told her when I called her, I said, Lorraine, I have this sudden urge to call you. I don't know why. And then I called her back the next day. I said, Lorraine, did you see this? George Lutz died. Mm-hmm. I said, and I had this sudden, and yesterday I had this sudden urge to call you. And at the exact time that he was having the heart attack out in Las Vegas.
Wow.
And she said, I'm not surprised. That's what happens. But so something in the ether out there in the universe, I don't consider that a coincidence.
No. No.
And another funny thing, one of the researchers that worked with Ed and Lorraine, also worked with them, Brian McIntyre, he's now an Eastern Orthodox priest, and he goes by the name of Father Maximos McIntyre. I was coming out of my local supermarket about a mile away, and this fellow comes up to me, and he says, you're Laura DiDio, and I said, yes, and he said, he introduces himself, I'm Father Maximos McIntyre. I was Brian McIntyre, and I worked with Ed and Lorraine Warren. He lives right nearby now.
Okay.
What are the chances?
Yeah, not good.
But that incident where I was just sitting here at my computer writing an article, writing a report on high technology, having nothing to do with anything, and the thought just came into my head, I have to call Lorraine Warren.
One of those things you can't explain, but they happen. They happen, and they're undeniable when they do.
Yeah, there's a lot of things behind the scenes with a lot of the people who were involved in Amityville. I mean, I think over the years, people have said that no one else has, all the subsequent 4 or 5 families who have lived in the house in the 43 years since the Lutzes moved in and out, that there haven't been any other incidents. I don't think that's true.
What,
you do hear other things.
This is interesting because that is exactly what I've heard, is that nothing else has happened to anyone that's lived there. What leads you to believe that or think that?
Because other people have said things. There was I've seen things online. There are real estate agents who have gone in there, and you see accounts. People see things. You know, you'll see things on forums and things online. There was a fellow who went in. He was he's a realtor, and he said he went into the house to show it, and he said he just felt really bizarre. He had a there was an open house, and he went in with a coworker, and the coworker said he and this other woman went in and said, you know, something feels weird. And at the time, he said, this fellow, James, said he didn't feel anything. He wrote the comments off as angst. And, of course, they knew the history of the house. Everybody out on Long Island did.
Sure.
And when they went down to the basement in the cellar where the oil burner is, this other woman named Jane got spooked, and she felt something, and they felt the temperature in the room drop, and they felt an eerie feeling and very cold air, and they just felt an eerie feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in the middle of summer. And they said it felt like somebody had opened a freezer door, so they just wanted to get out of there. And they said there was a concrete wall, and it had a square hole in it. So anyway, the woman wanted to just get the heck out of there, and she got out of the house and said, I'm not going back. And this woman was an agent, and these two people had just met that day. So they, you know, mm-hmm. went off. And then he says, the fellow said, I'm the biggest skeptic there is. And he said, if I was by myself, I would have just thought maybe I had too many Amityville horror movies in my head. And he says, but, you know, I was there with other people, and we were, you know, having the same feeling. So it legitimized the feelings.
It makes you wonder how many other stories there are inside that house after the Lutzes that they just didn't want to share, or that people didn't want to share for publicity and all that.
Yeah, and a lot of people, you know, and what people will say for the camera and what the, you know, or publicly, mm-hmm. is not the same as what they'll say. And Brian Wilson, one of the subsequent owners of the house, when he had a moving sale, okay, mm-hmm. you had to see, everybody was showing up, the newspapers, you know, that was in August of 2010.
Sure, I remember that.
Hundreds of people showed up for this moving sale. They had, you know, tape and bodyguards, mm-hmm. had to be hired to keep the sale under control. They would only let 20 people at a time enter the house. And, of course, a lot of it was, you know, people just wanted to get in and get a look at it. And they wouldn't let people into the basement or the upstairs room.
Yeah.
And then I did call up David and Caroline D'Antonio, who bought the house in 2010. And spoke to them at the time. And my conversation with them, and Mr. D'Antonio has since passed away from cancer, and they were longtime Amityville residents. And they basically said, oh, there's nothing, you know, in this house that's weird. And they didn't really, you know, want to talk about it. They said it was all made up. But, and we had wanted to try and get in for a story that we were doing, and the wife had said to me, Caroline D'Antonio, well, if my husband okays it, we would do it. And I said, you know, we'll be very respectful and, you know, not try and be sensational. So and the husband got on the phone. So I was on the phone with both of them. And the husband says, everybody says what you're saying and et cetera. And so they were being very nice and polite to me. And at one point, as soon as I mentioned Danny's name, it got very weird. At that point, Mrs. D'Antonio said, Danny Lutz, he's the reason. He and George Lutz, they're the ones that brought the darkness into this house. I'd never let Danny Lutz into this house. He could bring the darkness back in here. I said, okay. So on the one hand, she had said to me, she thought it was, she believed the New York Times article, she referenced a New York Times article that basically said it was all made up. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, at the mention of Danny Lutz's name, she said, Danny Lutz and George Lutz were the ones that had brought the darkness into the house.
Very bizarre. Very, very bizarre.
I don't know how Danny Lutz, at the age of 9, a 9-year-old child, could have been responsible for bringing darkness into the house.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense.
No. So there are a lot of contradictions. And there were a lot of anomalies that occurred in the story, and a lot of things that went on behind the scenes.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Laura DiDio about the Amityville Horror investigation. My thanks to Laura for coming on the show and sharing her accounts, her notes, and her experiences with us about a case that has intrigued me since childhood. This has been one of the biggest interview treats of my life. Thank you so much for being on the show today, Laura. And thank you for being a supporter of our program, The Grave Talks. Until next time, for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Vrsky. Thanks for listening.